Halloween again on Don't Slam Your Podcast, Halloween in August. It is the second to last episode of Series 8, which means it's the second to last episode of 2.4 Children that we're reviewing. This is Carry On Screaming. Joining me today is a returning guest to Don't Slam Your Podcast. A guy who joined us for The Parent Trap and for We'd Like to Know a Little Bit About You for Our Files. It's Martin. Martin, thank you for coming back on the show. How are you doing?
I'm really good, thank you.
Brilliant. And when I spoke to you, you were getting together your play Wheel of Fortune, which we're recording this now on the 30th of June, and it was actually on last week. So tell us how it all went.
Well, it went absolutely brilliant. You know, the cast, the crew, everything went, as Mr. Citizen Cameron say, tickety-boom. So, it was absolutely brilliant. You know, we had a good audience in. We had two nights. The first night we had the Mervigan who came, and then we had, you know, the last night, which was 80 tickets sold, which is really, really good. So it was just, you know, a good night, and everyone enjoyed it as well, which was good. And the audience were laughing in places, what I didn't intend to have it as that funny scene, but they did, and I don't understand why. And it happened the last time I staged it as well, because it's supposed to, there's an emotional scene between a mother and a son, but they were laughs all the way through it, and I'm like, I've not wrote it like that.
Interesting, yeah. It's always interesting when something's written a certain way, rehearsed a certain way, and then when it comes out, sort of out of the oven, how people interpret it. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
And you told me before we started that you had a little 2.4 tribute in the script.
Yes, I did. In the episode of The Diary of David Porter, there's a scene with the social worker and Bill and Ronan outside Aunt Belle's flat, and there's a line where she says, when the social worker says, have you tried gaining access to the premises? And then Bill says, we thought we spend our holidays as it's so nice here. Well, I put that line in my script, in my play, because throughout the play, there's like elements of things that are based on in my life, yes, what have happened to me. And I thought, what can I, you know, I just had to put, that just came in my head when I was like writing it. That was said in 2.4 Children that might work. So I just put that in as a little tribute to my, because I've got autism. So things with autism, because of the autism I've got, is Asperger's, and people with Asperger's, they get obsessive with things. And so my obsessions are like 2.4 Children, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, Rocky Horror, a few other things as well. Once I watch something, I become obsessed about it.
Yeah.
So I put like little things in there, in the play, as a salute to those things what I like.
So. Excellent. Well, very similar to what Andrew does with 2.4 Children. You know, there's episodes with like film parodies and stuff like that. I always love writing when writers bring in their influences, and there's a kind of nod or an Easter egg tribute. That's always really cool. So
yeah, it is.
Congratulations. Really glad it went well. Thanks. And I look forward to hearing about your next project, whatever what that's going to be. Before we go into the review, as I say, this is the second to last episode of 2.4 Children, and here is Andrew Marshall.
Hello again, we nearly reached the end now. I thought I'd tell you something I remembered about a previous episode, which was Sticky Fingers. You may be wondering how we did the clothes stuck to the floor effect. It's quite interesting this. We had three different removable floors, and the clothes were attached to the floors, so the actors, when they replaced the floor with the, for example, the tights stuck to the floor, the actors then had to go in and put the tights on even though they were attached to the floor or whatever. And that's how we did it, by swapping the floors over in between the takes. Anyway, now we come to Carry On Screaming, the second Halloween special. We never got to make a third one, so we would have had to have done The Mummy next time, in which Ben is worried that he might be a werewolf for various reasons, but it turns out that Ben is in fact Jewish, which we could have gone on to do some quite interesting episodes about later, which Gary was quite interested in doing. Anyway, it's a pretty fun episode with some great effects that Debbie Humphreys mastered over the whole episode. So here it is, and I hope you enjoy it. Carry On Screaming.
So we start on a full moon, and a group of children are in Halloween costumes. One's a ghost, one's a devil with thunder sort of ripples in the background.
Yeah.
And then Mary, the social worker who we first met in Perfect Day,
Yeah.
Opens the porter's door, and a little girl says, trick or treat. And Mary says, well, I don't actually live here. I'm a social worker.
Then they'll scream.
They all scream, and the children all run away screaming, which is such a great little joke in about, you know, kids being frightened of social workers and stuff.
Yeah, they are, yeah. Which is, you know, typical Andrew Marshall comedy, because that's something what only him would do.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, absolutely. And it's just a good sort of bit of commentary there.
Yeah.
Bill appears behind Mary and says, okay, we're ready for you now. Shut the door. On the sofa, David, Bill, Ben and Jenny sit in a row while Mary sits on a chair by them. And she starts to explain, well, I expect you all on tenterhooks with what I have to say about Declan. So I'll get to the point as quickly as I can. Only we find people get rather nervous when they know we've been investigating their family backgrounds in case we found out something terrible about them. Does this evil little Disney villain type laugh and then says, I mean, it's not for the family that when I meet them for the first time, seem to be a coven of psychopathic devil worshippers the way you did. And I love how the family just all look really kind of awkward and they are getting her humour, even though she's actually finding it funny. So Mary continues saying, but I'm glad we cleared up the misunderstanding when we did. As you know, we like our foster families to have certain qualities. And so the four of the family all change their posture to look like they're listening. Bill has a finger on her cheek, for example. And so Mary says, loving. And the four of the Porter family tilt their heads to the right with a sort of loving smile. And Mary continues saying, but with a certain amount of discipline. And then they all sort of have a serious look on their face. Jenny crosses her arms. And above all, stable and reliable. Ben then puts a wooded smoking pipe into his mouth, and then Bill pulls it out. I love the way she pulls it out, and it's almost like he's like, ow.
Because that's something like just only a typical Ben quirk, you know, just to be like,
yeah,
he would only do that because it's his character, and it's, you know, like a kid would be make it like impress somebody.
Yes, he almost is like Sherlock Holmes, isn't it? That's why I associate a wooded pipe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Mary says, so I'm glad to tell you, as a result of our inquiries, we find you imminently suitable, and I see no reason why Declan shouldn't be joining you permanently as soon as we can make arrangements. So Bill's very happy, you know, now the story arc's coming to an end. Declan is going to be joining the Porters. But Ben has tweaked on to the words that she said about inquiries. Bill slaps him, and Ben's like, well, Ben wants to know what it is. Bill asks, you know, is that it? Mary says, well, there are one or two things to be tied up, but they require confirmation. She then asks if she can come back first thing in the morning to go through those with the family. Bill says, we're thrilled. Ben still wants to find out what's going on. She opens the door for Mary as they all sort of have the smiling beam on their face. And Bill's like, bye, Jenny. Bye, David. See ya. As soon as Bill shuts the door, it's like they all just breathe a sigh of relief. She's like, oh, thank God for that. And Jenny says, I couldn't keep that smile up for a second longer. It was like being in an episode of Friends. Jenny then starts to do a little dance like they do at the beginning of Friends, and then just says, we're here for you. And it's, David says, no, it was more like the Twilight Zone film, The Sickly Family of Horror. I've been waiting to fart for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
But Jenny's like, well, don't do it now. And Dave's like, I have. Jenny carries on saying, oh, David, you're disgusting. And I like what's good in this episode is that we've had sticky fingers showing them all growing up and their senses sort of grow into adulthood. But even if they're sort of nearing 20, they've still got that sibling fighting.
Yeah, they do. You know, and then they're all fighting on the couch, aren't they? And then with the pillars and...
Yeah. But it's funny way how, like, Jenny's like, Dave's like, you never do it, Miss Flatulence, and then says that you only do it quietly and blame it on Harry. And then I love how Bill's like, be quiet or I'll kill you both. She's just not having it at all.
No, she's not, no. Because she's thinking, oh, you're old enough to know better, so why are you, you know, doing, you know, fighting like that?
Jenny then asks, where's the air freshener? David says, doesn't your gallon of cheapo perfume drown it out? So Jenny says, it's CK1. David then says, smells more like WD-40. So I had to Google it. CK1's Calvin Klein. And WD-40, I think, is used for like motorbikes and
stuff.
I can imagine it smells very strong.
Yeah, it does. WD-40 does smell strong, and you use it for like hinges, but stopping squeaking and stuff like that.
Interesting. Yeah. So, yeah, he's probably thinking that's what her cheapo perfume smells like then. Ben says no one mentioned anything about investigating family backgrounds, and Bill ignores him, puts up the smoking pack, and just says, "And what was this for?" Ben says it was to make him look more fatherly. Jenny then appears spraying the air freshener very sort of firmly, says she wants to make it a place fit for humans. And then David, it sort of gives her the final sting and says, "Well, you never worry about what gets into your college bedroom." Jenny then goes, "David Porter, I hate you," and pushes him on the sofa, and they're fighting. And yeah, poor Bill, she's probably thinking, like, why are they doing this at their age?
Yeah, that's like I said before, it's like they shouldn't be fighting at that age, because it's like, you know, the 21, 18, you know.
Yeah.
Because does David confirms his age in the next episode, doesn't he?
Yes, because he passed this test, doesn't he? But yeah. I think Jenny's 19 because of sticky fingers. I know that Bill's at one point to Ben, she's 19 now. So 19, yeah, they're only like 1 or 2 years apart.
Yeah.
But again, they're still close and they still got that sibling.
Yeah, because in the next episode, it confirms he gets a tattoo, and you've got to be 18 to get a tattoo.
Of course, yes. Very, very true, yes.
So that confirms his age is 18.
Amazing. Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. Then Ben says, yeah, well, they can keep their noses out my family background, because, and then we hear Mary go, "Hello." And then she comes back in, and in that time, the family kind of scurry around to, you know, go away from domestic chaos to domestic bliss. It almost looks like they're posing for a family photo.
Yeah, it's some like a false facade what they put on to just impress her.
Mary then says that she forgot to say to Ben that when they were investigating his family background, something did come up. He spoke to his uncle, who wanted them to give Ben his number. Jenny tells her that Ben's dad had a sister, Auntie Ruby, who brought up Ben. Now, in the previous episode with Declan, after the Fox, we learned that. And so now we know the name Auntie Ruby. And Mary then explains that it's actually his mother's brother, and they couldn't trace his mother. David explains that they don't talk about her, and they think she went abroad. Bill takes the notes, and Mary leaves. Ben's obviously very despondent by the news. Bill says to him, you know, "I'm sure they didn't mean to. They only check as a matter of course." And I like how, as with anything in 2.4, it's always a bit of a solemn moment that's kind of undercut by something funny. And we hear a fart sound. And Jenny, she goes, "Oh, Harry."
Yeah.
And Dave says, "Who do you think you're fooling? He's not here." Bill tells them to find him. Bill standing at this point. Ben says he never knew he had an uncle. Bill asks if they'll give him a ring. Ben says no. Bill says, well, he obviously wants you to. Ben says, well, why didn't he ring me? He's only had 40 years. Bill asks if Ben's mum had ever mentioned having a brother. And of course, he was only 3 when she left. So how would he know? And then, you know, she's trying to be quite positive about it. She says, well, he won't have known where you were. He has to have it somewhere else. You know, he says, like, maybe I'll give him a ring some other time. Bill reads the letter and asks if it's his name, if it's Croatian or something. Ben says, again, no, just can you just put it away, yeah? Bill then plays with her nails. And I like this sort of brief moment of Bill's playing with her nails, and Ben just grows more frustrated and makes these funny facial expressions of just like, and it's like almost as if he's wanting Bill to push him into going and finding out about his uncle, but he's almost having to like say, well, come on, but she won't do it. So eventually he just says, all right, if you're gonna stop nagging me, I'll ring them. And it's a, you know, Bill's just like, what?
So and also Billy's sort of like doing things like that, she's going and then she's like as in for wanting him to go on and do it, like,
yes,
like it's a subtle way of, she doesn't have to nag him to do it, but it's a way of nagging him in, like the expression she's doing.
Yes, definitely. It's non-verbal communication, which I think they know each other's language, body language, facial expressions really well. And then he rings the number, no reply. He only lets it die for like 2 or 3 times, and then he says, "I should have known." Tells her to leave him alone, he'll be all right. The doorbell rings. Bill gasps as someone dressed in a tall Grim Reaper costume enters. Deep voice, "I am Death, the destroyer of worlds." Typical Bill, she says. "I think it's for you." Ben says, "Who's in there?" Christine's face peeks through the cloak just below the skeleton mask, and says, she says, "Carol Vorderman." She's in everything. Because it's interesting, because it was at a time, and I've heard this before, people saying around the late 90s, beginning of the 2000s, that Carol Vorderman who was obviously best known for Countdown, was in everything. She did a lot of documentary programs, reality programs.
Yeah, she did all the Pride of Britain Awards, stuff like that. And she was almost in everything. And also, the little gag of joke, what's coming up in a minute, I just love it. It's so funny. And it's like, if she said that now, it's not PC anymore.
Yes.
People get offended by it.
I think I know which one. Christine says, Ben said she could borrow the van to get to Shoreditch. Ben says he didn't know she meant going around just like that and asks, what are you doing? And Christine replies, going around old people's home, touting for business. What do you think? I think that's very funny. I think it's
hilarious, yeah. But if you say that now to the old-age pensioners, they'd get so offended by that now.
Or maybe it's the younger generation who would get offended by it.
Yeah, it would be, yeah. Yeah.
You get offended by everything that's not direct, by jokes that aren't directed at them.
Yeah.
That's the way it is with comedy these days.
Yeah, it is.
So,
because she's dressed as Death, isn't she?
Grim Reaper, yeah. Going round. And it's just, yeah, it's a very funny line. And then Christine says, you know, you're always on about Halloween. What's up with you tonight? And it's an interesting one because if you think compared to The Lady Vanishes, the first Halloween special, Ben's not as enthusiastic.
Yeah.
A, because of what he's just found out, but B, because of Declan and that meeting on Halloween means they've had to be, well, they probably would have had an argument, Bill saying, no, we can't put Halloween decorations up, you know, what kind of home do you think, especially when they thought she, Mary thought they were satanic. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
So Ben gives Christine the van keys and tells her to be back by midnight. And then Christine asks, what happens then? And Ben replies, you change back into a short-ass plumber's mate. That's a great line. That's really funny.
It's really good, that one.
Great Cinderella reference there. And just a really funny... it's almost like a visual. I can just imagine Christine getting back at midnight and then she loses the Grim Reaper costume. It's just back to being a short-ass plumber's mate. Just a funny line. And then Christine's like, I have got a scythe, you know. Bill appears and says, yes, have a lovely time. See you later. Christine says, I'll get him for that. And Bill says, good. Shuts the door. David finds Harry in the cellar behind a box. Ben goes to get him. The phone rings. At the top of the cellar stairs, Ben holds out a box of squeaky toys. And he goes, Harry, squeaky, squeaky nun. And then he says, oh, shall I get out Mr. Floppy? And Bill replies, that usually works for me. So when Bill answers the phone, I love Ben's expression when he comes out of the cellar. He's just like giving her a very kind of cheeky look.
Because she said, because the line is about Mr. Do you want Mr. Floppy? And then he says, she goes, oh, that didn't do any good for me. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cheeky comment.
Yeah.
Jenny says Harry won't budge. David says he looked like he was about to come out, but when Ben shouted, he wouldn't move. And then David asks Ben if he's frightened him somehow. Bill then turns around and says on the phone, that was the uncle's home help who dialed 1471. Home help, obviously, going around and helping people at home who aren't well. She says that he's not in the best of health and it might be wise to come as soon as possible. So outside the house, Christine still... I love this visual. Christine still wearing the Grim Reaper costume, looks both ways in the van as she drives off. It's just a really funny visual.
It is a very funny visual. And, you know, I wonder if it was actually Kim driving that or it was a stunt person, because driving in that van with her on might be a bit difficult.
Yeah, so, potentially, yeah.
Because she wouldn't have to have been in that scene to do it, would she? Because they could have just shot that on location with just a member of crew in a van.
Yeah, exactly. It's that. Yeah, I'd be intrigued to know who was driving that car in that costume.
Yeah.
Bill and Ben run outside. Bill asks what's wrong with the car. Ben says they're waiting for a new distributor cap from Detroit and it starts raining. Now, I just wanted to make a comment about something that I noticed in the BBC trailer for Series 8. So anyone seen the trailer for which was broadcast before Series 8 started? There's obviously clips from the various episodes and they will highlight, you can see them in the episodes that are available. But there's one clip from this episode that isn't actually in the final cut. And it's a scene where Bill and I think the other four, at least the other children, are in at the top of the cellar like Ben was, and she's holding, I assume, some kind of squeaky toy, and then she just sort of backs off, as almost, it almost is as if Harry's farted, the way that she reacts. And I just wonder if there's a deleted scene in that.
Yeah. Yeah, see what you mean, yeah.
I'll have to find that one out.
Yeah.
And then in Bill and Ben's bedroom, Ben's looking in the mirror while Bill comes in saying she's booked a minicab. Ben's pulling out nose hair, which it's funny because there's obviously in Lady Vanishes, there's another kind of nose hair sort of gag when he's got the sellotape on his nose, pulls it, and then he gets rid of all his nose hair. And Bill says, "Oh, be grateful. I'd have to pay heaven knows what for treatment like that."
Yeah. So,
why does hair grow everywhere except where you want it to? It's spreading out of my ears. And I think this is almost a foreshadow for what's to come, obviously. We learn at the end of the episode what's really happening.
Yeah.
In terms of the mystery of what they think is going on in the family background, it builds it up to something. There's still thunderstorms, so it builds up that sort of Halloween atmosphere. Jenny enters as she's about to leave the house. Bill thanks her for coming back for the meeting with Mary. Jenny says bye to Ben. Ben asks, you know, what is it, a Halloween disco? And Jenny's like, that's right, a disco. And I'll be going with John Travolta and two of the Bee Gees.
Yeah.
And then I love how Ben's like, oh, give me 5 minutes alone with Keith and I could make him sing in that voice.
Yeah. And also how Jenny delivers that as being so sarcastic. It's brilliant, is how Claire Buckfield just delivers that really sarcastically, really, really good. And it just suits that moment.
Oh, it does, because obviously Ben is showing his age and the generation gap, a disco, because that will have been his era.
Yeah.
And John Travolta and the Bee Gees would have been seen as very last, you know, 20 years earlier and seen as quite old school, even by then. And obviously when Ben says, leave me alone with Keith for 5 minutes, I'll make him sing in that voice, making him sing in a high-pitched voice like the Bee Gees. Jenny leaves as the cab driver rings the doorbell. Ben's having second thoughts. He says, you know, why does that social worker say she had to come back? What have they found out about me? Bill says, you've heard what she says. She's just waiting for final confirmation. Ben's like, well, what do they know that we don't? I know nothing about it. It could be anything, you know. Perhaps we should just leave it. Bill tells him, stop being so aware, and asks, what is there to be afraid of? As any good moment in 2.4 Children, there's a scene that ends with this idea of everything being normal, everything will be normal, and of course, being the pause, it never is. So in the minicab, Bill and Ben are driving to the location, which is a gated place. And I like how Ben says, oh my God, I was dressing it being something really depressing. Ben asks if he'll drive to the door. It's padlocked, so they're going to have to walk there.
Yeah.
They ask how much. It's £19.40, which, I mean, bear in mind, we don't know the location, but I hate paying that now for an Uber or a taxi cab.
Yeah.
Imagine how much that would have been in 1999.
Yeah.
Quite a lot more in 2020.
The interesting thing about this scene, this particular scene, is that it would have been like filmed somewhere Pacific, because they might not have had a real rain on that night. They would have had to have a rain machine.
Yes.
So to get that thing, so it's quite interesting that the detail what went on filming this and anything like this and the outside would have been specialist equipment done. So it just shows you how they would have done it.
Oh, absolutely. And I definitely noticed at some point something as well. For me, there's a shot where I feel like it was a dash cam, you know, on the mirror at the very front of the car. It looks like a dash cam. Obviously, close-up shots of the characters look obviously a camera, but yeah, it's just interesting the different look of the direction. It definitely, as I keep saying, you know, Series A obviously was filmed in different aspect ratio, and although it is obviously the same series, there are times where I feel like it looks like a completely different show, just aesthetically compared to the first series.
I get, me too, the same. It just looks a bit, I think from when they did the, for me, I think it, from when it was a different show, I think it was when they did the one on the Vertigo, the season Vertigo. From that point onwards, it was all like, you know, it had a different feel to the show.
And it's the different directors as well, really. Yeah. Series 6, 7, Nick Wood and this Stewie Humphrey, along with different equipment and a different aspect ratio. It's just, a different directing style.
Yeah.
Say it looks the same on surface level, but aesthetically it does have a different feel to it.
Yeah. Even though the filming of 2.4 Children towards season 8, it's got like a modern feel to it with the text and what they use for the credit, you know, when they have the credits at the beginning starting, all that's in different formats.
Yeah, exactly.
Not the blue, and it's just like, it feels more modern to, you know, what they've done with it.
Definitely, and in fact, I think we missed the opening credit discussion earlier. Sorry to just go back a little bit. Yeah, because the opening credits in this episode have a witch flying over the street, because every episode has a sort of individual detail specific to that episode. Now, of course, a witch isn't involved in this episode. It's more werewolves and a vampire with when we see Rona. But again, it adds that Halloween flavour, and it has a nice aesthetic just seeing that animated witch flying across the top of the houses at Chepstow Road. Bill and Ben get out of the car, and Bill asks if the taxi driver can wait for them. He can't, as he has a fare in 10 minutes and drives off. Ben asks if they can just go home. You know, they can't, obviously, because £19.40 is probably the same to get back. There's like horror music playing in the background, which I like. It feels, it's sort of building it up to the Halloween vibe and it being something mysterious. It is as well,
but also it's a bit cheesy as well. Because it's like a comedy, but it's like you get that cheesy vibe from it because of what the comedy is. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's not a film. There's something funny what's going to happen in it. But it makes the music a bit cheesy as well.
It does. And it's also, I think it gives, I mean, obviously the episode is called Carry On Screaming.
Yeah.
For anyone who's seen that film, brilliant. My money's the best Carry On film, in my personal opinion.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And it does play, because it's a spoof, that film, it works really well as a horror parody with the ingredients, and it's the same here. So through the gate, they can see a cottage, which Bill reckons where the keeper lives, and there's a cemetery leading up towards it. Ben's like, why do they always say that? And it's interesting when he's almost saying horror movie conventions, because she's saying, you know, I reckon that's where the keeper lives. Come on, we'll get soaked. It's almost as if they're going into a dark, foreboding place of evil.
Yeah, because it does remind me a bit of Rocky Horror at the beginning, where Brad and Janet are just coming up to Frank's house, you know, and it's all very wet and it's raining. It's got that element to it.
Oh yes, it is the sort of haunted house or house of horrors sort of thing. So they arrive at the cottage and a lady opens the door. Bill learns and Ben learns that the uncle is in fact the cemetery keeper. She says to Ben, oh, you're the nephew, aren't you? And Ben asks how she knows. The lady explains that I've seen your picture often enough. She goes over to a table of framed pictures of Alsatians and then grabs one from behind a big portrait. And it's quite funny because you think there's all these Alsatian photos in a frames on the table. It's just drip feeding these ideas.
Yeah, because it's like, you'd think that the uncle would be like, oh, I love this, I love Ben so much. But then it's like, there's a photo of all these Alsatians and dogs and stuff. And then that's behind it. And then it's like, it's like, after Ben sees that, it's like, well, he doesn't care about me. And that's how I would have been at the front.
Yeah, exactly.
My photo would have been at the front.
And it also builds up this idea of the werewolf. And so behind the main picture, the picture of an Alsatian, she gives him a picture of himself when he was small. She tells them that the uncle was found undressed in the middle of a cemetery in the pouring rain, and says, you know, miracle, it didn't catch his death. He has a fever of 102. We caught the bronchitis in time. He's been put up in bed and the night nurse will be there in a little while, and leaves. I love how they both turn to the pictures of the Alsatians. Now, that's a very typical horror trope, just sort of turning towards something eerie. And then Bill says, you don't suppose he's got one? Ben then replies, if he did, he'd probably be at our throats by now. So, I mean, that's, you know, think about the werewolf films. The Howling, yeah, and American Wealth in London, The Wolfman. Yeah. It's building up this idea of wolves. And of course, there will be a reference to a specific werewolf movie later on.
Yeah, and also, they're looking at him for the first time, and they've never seen him before. And he's got all her on him, and he's all like everything.
Yeah.
The guy who plays him is, oh, what's his name? Windsor Davis, isn't
yes, it is indeed. And Windsor Davis, obviously, very well known for It Ain't Half Hot Mum and lots of comedy, TV and films.
Jimmy Perry and David Cross sitcoms he was in.
Yeah.
You know, which are the best sitcoms which were ever written.
Yeah, he's a legend.
Yeah, he is.
So Bill turns to the bedroom, and I like the build up to meeting him. She's like, hello. And then Ben sees a wolf head, like mantelpiece on the wall. And in the dark bedroom, the bulb has been taken out. They both whisper to avoid scaring him. Bill asks Ben to open the curtains. And I like how she says, you know, in case it's a street light, and Ben replies, in the middle of a cemetery.
Yeah.
Bill says she'll do it and asks Ben to wake him up gently. Bill opens the curtains with the moonlight showing Uncle Lon. And as you say, he's very, you know, he's an old man with long hair, bushy beard, but clean on the chin and a mustache. It's a very
descriptive,
bizarre look, really.
Yeah,
it is. His chin is totally shaven. Ben screams, and so does Uncle Lon. And so it kind of builds up this whole thing with the title of Carry On Screaming.
Yeah,
it does. Horror convention screaming. Yeah. Bill says, oh, you've terrified him. Uncle Lon hides behind the quilt. And he keeps saying, you know, it will come in. And something is terrifying him as he covers himself. It will come in. Ben sticks his hand towards the light of the moon and says, look, no rain now. Nothing but on my hand, but moonlight. Nothing on my hand, but the moonlight. So that comes back later on. Bill tells Ben to close the curtains. And after he does, things calm down. Bill and Ben introduce themselves, and it's all a bit awkward. Ben tries to leave, and Uncle Lon grabs his hand. His arm shows a lots of hair. If you notice, through this, just at the bottom of his sleeve, there's a lot of hair.
It is, yeah. I like this next joke. This next joke is so funny. I mean, it's funny. I only got it when I was in the shower thinking about it after watching it. I'm like, I get it now.
Yeah, he says, Ben, and Uncle Lon says, Ben, little Ben, picture I have. Bill shows in the picture, and then Uncle Lon looks at him and goes, Big Ben now.
Yeah.
Yeah, because of course, linking to the Big Ben, the clock in London, but yeah. Ben says he's, you know, oh, that's nice, insulted by a fever-crazed geriatric.
Yeah.
The thing is, he is obviously Big Ben now.
Yeah,
I don't think he's referring to his weight. He's just referring to the fact that he was a little boy in that picture, and now he's a grown man. 40.
And then you've got the reference of Big Ben, and then he's being insulted by, as you said,
crazed geriatric.
Yeah.
Uncle Lon coughs, and Bill gives him a glass of water and a pill. And another note thing, Uncle Lon, Lon Chaney Jr., just get that kind of horror vibe and...
You know.
And Uncle Lon says Ben has the eyes of his mother. Ben asks if she's still alive, and Uncle Lon says, I don't know. I have not seen him for very long. Something to give you. Very important. You must know your secret. Open the box. Open the box. And then Ben says, I'd rather take the money.
Yeah. And then he also says, what's passed down to the males in the family?
Yes, he does. And the thing I like about that line when Ben says, I'd rather take the money, that is a radio and TV game show called Take Your Pick.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch that?
Vaguely. I can't remember it at all.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't heard of it. I had to type in, open the box, I'd rather have the money, and that's where it came to. Lon points to his left for Bill to get the box, and he continues, you know, pass down the mails of the family. Time for you to know. Bill thinks she's found the box, and then Uncle Lon falls asleep. Ben finds the bottle of pills that Bill gave him were actually sleeping tablets. And I like when Ben says, yeah, I finally saw someone who could tell me about my past, and you drunk them up.
Yeah.
But it wasn't intentional. It was a mistake. We're going to have to wait for the nurse. Bill says, probably help him get better knowing Ben is there. Ben looks through the curtain and says it stopped raining and the wind has blown the clouds away, which is, you know, clear. It's a clear moonlight then.
Yeah.
Ben looks at Long and says, and to think I was worried about hair spreading out my ears. Because he's putting into perspective getting a lot of hair. He's probably nothing in comparison to Uncle Long.
And then he goes on to insulting Bill as well.
Ben says Bill, if she thinks he'll end up looking like him because he's his uncle. Ben says, you know, you look like your Auntie Annie. And I like Ben and Bill's reaction, like, she's a hag!
She's a hag! Yeah.
The way she says hag.
Yes.
And it's quite, I get a vision of Auntie Annie in, you know, in sort of hag look. And Ben says,
I sort of have an image of how that would be, like an image, a cross between Belle, Aunt Belle and Bette put together.
Yes. Well, Belinda Lang is now in a series on BritBox called the Sister Bonnyface Mysteries.
Oh, is she?
She is. And it's a spin-off of the series Father Brown. And it's Lorna Watson who plays this nun called Sister Bonnyface. And it's these mysteries in a small town. I've only seen clips of it, and Belinda Lang plays an old spinster who is a landlady for two of the men who work with Sister Bonnyface, and she's got silver hair and glasses. I mean, she looks nothing like, I mean, she doesn't, I mean, even when you see pictures, recent pictures of Belinda Lang, she still looks like she did 20 years ago, same hair and everything, but with the silver wig and everything, she looks, they made her look like an old lady. I mean, the makeup and everything. And that's what I imagine she looked like as Auntie Annie.
Well, I was watching something quite recently, and it was Citizen Kane, and she appeared in an episode of Citizen Kane.
He did, yes.
As the Fermin episode. And that was just, again, I was like, I was very afraid of watching, like, that's Belinda Lang.
Yeah, I know.
You know, and I think she must be based in around Birmingham in that way, because that's where the film system came. They filmed in Birmingham and Manchester, because that I went watching it being filmed and recorded in Manchester, and then the film next year was in Birmingham. So Our 2.4 Children was filmed in Birmingham as well.
It was the first episode, but the first one was at Pebble Mill, and then it went
Pebble Mill. It was BBC Centre. That's where I got the picture of my background from. It's the
So, it's interesting because
there's some connections there with like Citizen Kane being filmed in Birmingham. Four Children was in Pebble Mill. Yeah. That's where they filmed it.
Yeah,
you know, so there's quite comedy connections there.
Oh yeah, 100%. It's all it's all across the country. So you and Ben continue saying you will look like her, obviously eventually. It's inevitable. It's passed down through the family. Ben suddenly feels uneasy by Uncle Lon saying pass down the males of the family. And the instant thing he says, oh my God, I'm a haemophiliac, which is blood clots, which generally happen to men in families, apparently. Bill says he would know by now. It means you can't stop bleeding. And
I am a heavy bleeder.
I'm a heavy bleeder. And Bill's like a silly one.
Yeah.
And then she goes on to say, well, it's probably just heart disease. And Ben's like, heart disease? Because it's like, yes, lots of people have it in their family. If you had it, you'd want to know about it. He goes, oh, I do not. The doorbell rings. Bill thinks it's the other nurse. She opens the front door, and it's this sort of dramatic horror kind of music as Rona appears wearing fake fangs, dressed up like Morticia Adams. And the music is dum, 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 dum. Bill screams. And, you know, I think what I say with Rona, she looks not just like Morticia Adams. She reminds me a little bit of the Fenella Fielding character. Is it Valeria in Carry On Screaming?
Yeah.
With the dress and the long black hair. And then Rona says, you know, David told her they might need a lift. And if you ever see the original Adams Family TV show from the 60s, Carolyn Jones was Morticia Adams, she always looks like she's only just about fitting in her dress. Yeah. It's such a tight dress.
Yeah.
And the way she runs, it's like she's scurrying along.
Yeah, same in this way, Ronish. And she says, it took me 20 minutes to walk up the garden gate from the garden gates.
Yeah, that's the thing. And she really captures that walk.
She does.
really, really well. But it's like, it's funny because it's like her hands are moving, like she's trying to go quicker with her arms, and she looks like she can't even do like power walking. It's like they're straight down. She's moving them, and then her little feet are scurrying around. It's a funny visual. She does it later on. Well, before we go into the bedroom, Rona sees the wolf on the head on the wall, like Ben said earlier. She goes, "That can't look good on the other side of the wall."
Yeah.
Old ones are the best, as they say.
Yeah.
So in the bedroom, they try to force open the box as it contains everything that Ben needs to learn. Ben tells Rona it's what Uncle Lorne wanted to warn Ben about, the curse of the porters. And it's so typical of Ben to want to make everything very dramatic.
Yeah.
Bill says he never mentioned anything about a curse. And Ben's like, yes, he did. He ends up naked in the cemetery in the night. Bill says he had an infection. He was delirious. Ben said, no, it was the curse. And Rona, once again, being such a dreadful influence, asked him, ooh, what did he say the curse was? It's like, Bill, like, Rona, you're not helping.
Yeah.
Rona asks what it is. Ben says, we don't know. Someone passed him a Mogadon. You know, a Mogadon is like a sleeping tablet. And Bill looks really bad. She does this thing where she rubs her chest when she's embarrassed. She goes, oh, it was his time for it. She did it in the last episode of Series 7 when she is caught having put a sewing machine in Jenny's bedroom after she leaves for university.
Yes. She's there. She does this a lot, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rona says if it's passed down the males of the family, that means David could get it, and shouldn't they try and find out what it is? Ben then tries to open the box. Bill says perhaps it won't do any harm. And I like how Bill just sort of is starting to get a bit more nervous. She goes, I hope it's nothing nasty. Ben opens the box and they all lean back in case something jumps out. And Bill finds a picture of another dog. Ben looks at the back, which has some writing on it. He goes to the lamp by Uncle Ron and reads under the light, Lupus Humana. Rona did Latin at school. Lupus is for wolf and not dog. And Ben's like, and Humana. Rona, and what Julia Hills does so well is always say something that's obvious what it means, but performs it and delivers the lines like Rona just wouldn't have a clue. She says, well, that usually means human, but I don't know what that's got to do with it.
Yeah.
And hear a howl. And Ben comes to the conclusion. They found him outside naked. It's passed by the males of the family. Wolf, human. And it's similar to the Italian job when he's trying to give Bill the realization of what's going on with Fabrizio's family.
It is exactly like that, because she goes, you mean the godfather, yes.
Yes. And then Ben just says, he's a werewolf. Bill's like, don't be ridiculous. And again, Rona does her little scurry over to Uncle Lon and says, oh, he's just a harmless old. And as she taps his arm, he wakes up screaming. Uncle Lon then is very dazed and confused, says, boy, good boy, probably start howling soon if we're not careful. It's the moon that starts you off. And he falls back asleep. Bill tries to get more information out of him, and Ben's getting more hysterical.
Yeah.
Ben's like, that means I'm a werewolf too. He's like, no, you're not. There's no such thing. And if you notice behind Ben, there's a dog calendar.
Yeah.
Rona continues being the poor influence and saying, he's right, Bill. I saw the Hammer film with Oliver Reed. And I love how Bill instantly misinterprets what Rona says. And she's like, you went to a film with Oliver Reed. It's as if Rona's got around London so much that she'd at some point have gone on a date with Oliver Reed.
Yeah.
But she explains, no, he was in it. And Rona explains the plot of The Curse of the Werewolf, which was the Hammer film that Oliver Reed was in. She says, but it was when the moon came out, he got all snarly and subhuman. Admittedly, he got like that after five drinks anyway. And I like this bit where, again, they're in a really weird situation, but Will and Rona just go off on one conversation. It feels like, yes, but he was still quite sexy. And it's like, I thought so too. Even when he got fat, I was like, I quite liked him fat.
Yeah. It sort of reminds me of when Rona's actually doing, I don't know what episode it is, but she says something like, oh, pulling his teeth out with an anesthetic.
Oh, yeah. It was our last episode. We'd like to know about it for our files. The Dustin Hoffman reference, when she thinks it's Marathon Man, not The Graduate.
Because she's delivering those lines the same way she's delivering that, which is, you know, she's living is the same way, you know. And
when, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
total kind of continuation with continuity of character description and character dialogue and delivery. It's fantastic stuff, really.
See, that's how committed they were to about continuity with the, how they did each scene. So
and the way they're written as well.
Yeah. Because it's like you said with the Italian jumper, with the spelling things out and then going it, they do it again in this scene. So it's a continuation of each character's personality.
Yeah, exactly.
And that you don't get very much these days, do you?
Oh, no, not at all. A lot of comedies today just kind of write every episode as they want to and not really take a lot of time. But again, because it's Andrew's writing, I know the Italian job was written by Paul Smith, but the continuation and the knowing the world and creating the world has helped with the continuity. Yeah. And going back to Oliver Reed, he was a sort of notorious Hellraiser actor. He actually died a few months before this episode was made, so he was kind of better known at the time. And then Ben says, you know, will you shut up about Oliver Reed? I'm about to turn into a wolf. Rona's like, not unless you go out into the moonlight. And Bill brings back the logic, says, all right, you're a werewolf. It's a terrible disease that's passed down through the males in the family. Why haven't you turned into a wolf before? Rona suggests it happens at only certain times of the year, like the cricket season. Of course, she had to pick something so random, like the cricket season. Ben's like, yes, it only happens at special times. Bill says, well, even if this was the special time, Ben was out in the moonlight earlier and nothing happened.
Yeah.
Ben says, the clouds hit the moon, but they've gone away now. I think he's just quite enjoying it, really. He's delirious, but he's enjoying it. Bill walks towards the curtain and Ben says, don't open it, stop with all this rubbish. Rona's like, he could be right, Bill. His uncle's very hairy. Bill says, all right. There's one thing that will convince me. Earlier on, you stuck your hand out of the window and said that there was nothing on it but moonlight. And Ben's like, oh my God, so I did. Bill says, right then, let's see your hand then. See if it's hairy. And if it is, Ben puts his hand out and shows that there is a patch of hair running from the middle of his hand. And the three of them all scream. It's a wonderful visual. He just puts his hand out. And they all, because Bill goes from being very serious, very authoritative, to just losing it completely.
Yeah. And believing his theory.
Yeah, because Bill's always just goes, what is that? And it's like, I told you, it started already. And Rona continues saying, maybe bum fluff, but it's definitely hair. Ben says he'll be all right if he stays out of the moonlight. And suddenly he asks Rona if David mentioned going out. And Rona says, no, don't worry. He said he was going to go up to his bedroom early, then look for UFOs through the skylight. But it's like, skylight, oh no. The doorbell rings. It's clearly the night nurse. Ben says, right, we might not have much time. On the full moon, we're outside the cottage. Bill and Ben run through the cemetery and Ben's covered, I assume, in like a blanket or something. And he shouts back going, whatever you do, nurse, keep the curtains closed. Bill says, this is ridiculous. Ben goes, go faster. Bill's like, I am going faster. And then the camera just turns, moves to the right. And then Rona's kind of struggling to run. She goes, I can't keep up.
Yeah. Because she's running like a Morticia rate of Adam's family.
She is. It's brilliant. Again, another great visual of her struggling in that dress. And the Hammer music is very much playing at this moment. And we go back to the house. And they're all just absolutely frantic at this moment. You know, Rona's still scurrying. Bill goes over to the dining room table to close the curtains. And Ben puts on gloves and a lampshade sort of over his head. They run upstairs except for Rona, who clearly is struggling. In David's bedroom, a light shines through the skylight directly onto David's bed. And sitting there is a dog. Not an Alsatian, but it's a dog.
Yeah.
I love the way that Bill and Ben just appear. And they just sort of like, David, son. They're really earnestly thinking he's turned into this wolf. Mm. So then David,
And then the dog barks, reacts to them.
It's a very small dog. It's not even a wolf at all. David then appears behind them and he says, how long has that been there? So the next day, it's daylight, it's very nice weather. Mary, the social worker, tells Bill that Declan will join them as soon as they can make arrangements. Rona appears as Mary leaves. And I like how Mary says hello to Rona, and bear in mind, she actually met Rona the previous year when she turned her down for adoption. Rona then explains, this is a nice bit of moment where everything starts to be explained. It's typical sort of great moments in 2.4 where you think all these weird things are happening, but everything's actually explained. It's all a number of coincidences that happen that when put together create this potential for something weird and supernatural.
Yeah.
So Rona comes and explains that it was the Mongol from around the corner, and the woman says thanks. The Mongol got out again, and it's a dog of no defining breed. I like how David says, never mind, Harry, not every dog is a hero. And I love how Harry just looks really sort of cute on the floor. As Ben says, fat lot of use he is keeping strays out of the house. Could have saved us a lot of trouble. Bill then appears and says, and speaking of things saving us trouble, brings me to this. Bill holds up a bottle.
In a typical Bill sarcastic way of going, well, like she does in all the episodes, going, well, we thought we'd spend our holidays. It's so nice here. And then she does it's the way she just delivers little things like that, the sarcasm in it and the humour. It's just... Again, that's continuity all the way through it, isn't it? Because the way she delivers something in one episode reminds you of how she said it in another episode and another episode.
Yeah, and I like how Ben says, ah, yes, well, that was an unavoidable misunderstanding. Bill reads out scalp gain 99. And it's funny because Ben does like to buy all these machines and equipment to make life better, like the Jam Buster in Mayday. Yeah.
The thing for his six pack for the thing.
Yes.
Scarf Lady box with the.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah. He just likes to try all the new.
Yeah.
Fads and equipments and stuff. Bill's reading out saying maximum strength genetically engineered hair lotion. Do not exceed the stated amount. Always use the rubber gloves provided when applying to the head. The product is not tested or approved by the US Administration's Bureau. And I like how Ben says, well, it looked good on the internet. You usually need a special prescription for things like that. And it's interesting because by this point, the internet was only a couple of years old, really. I mean, obviously, it was explored in 1904, Christmas Special Relaxevoo. But it's even more of a thing now in terms of buying all sorts of weird things out off the internet. People creating, you know, scamming stuff, and it's funny because it's got Ben into a lot of trouble. Bill says because it can grow hair on your palms, and then Ben shows his hairy palms and says, well, at least we know it works. Bill also says that Uncle Lon's home help rang and he's feeling much better. And it's funny when she then goes on to explain all the situation with the dogs. So it turns out he was a pedigree Malamute breeder for 30 years. And Rona's like, Malamute? Ben explains, those bug dogs that look like wool. Ooh, ooh, ooh. And then winning Crufts in 1952 with his supreme champion, Lupus Humana, a picture of which he keeps locked away. So we learn that's where is all the pictures of the dogs come from. Rona says, oh, the dog he was talking about when he was asleep. Ben says, what I suspect all along is just some old harmless geezer. And then Bill's like, well, now's your chance to find out. Uncle Lon appears with the nurse holding a green box for Ben. It's the real box he was trying to tell Ben about, the one that's passed down through the males of the family. And Lon says, now you will know about your history. In the boxes are pictures. Ben says it's him in one picture and another with his mum, or as he refers to David, your other grandma. David says she looks nice. And then Ben keeps going on. It's a very sweet moment. It's like, oh, and here she is with great grandma and granddad. Never even heard of them. Bill then says, well, there's no horrible secrets in your family. Just a bunch of people you haven't met yet. And Ben says, thanks, Uncle. He puts his hand on his shoulder and says, I'm sorry I've not seen you in so long. And Uncle Lon says, are you going to kiss me? Ben says, no. Uncle Lon goes, good, I hardly know you. Bill then tells him that when Declan arrives, Bill then says, well, so when Declan arrives, we can show him your mum as well. Ben looks at more photos, says, Uncle's right. I am going to find about my history. And here she is with the rabbi. And he just looks at her, she goes, the rabbi. And like Uncle Long just shrugs his shoulders. And that ends the episode.
Yeah.
But it ends the main episode, the storyline, but it's not the end of the program. Because as what happened at the beginning of the first episode, Fame, there was a post-credit advert for the next step for the Millennium Special, which, if anyone remembers a few years ago on YouTube, when these episodes were uploaded, there was an original broadcast of this episode, and it included a post-credit advert. Gary Olson is standing to the camera and says, "Hello, just to say that we'll be back with a brand new Millennium Special episode." Belinda Lang appears with a mobile phone and says, "Gaz, it's some man called Tarrant. He says he's phoning a friend." And Gary goes, "Oh, all right." Turns around with the phone in his hand, and Belinda turns to the camera and says, "Just to say we'll be back with a brand new special Millennium episode of 2.4 Children right here on BBC One. Is that right?" And then Gary says, "Eh?" "No, Chris, not A. Not A. No, no." The phone hangs up and he turns to Belinda and goes, "Oh, brilliant." Belinda turns to the camera and goes, "What?" And it's just a really funny finish of the episode because
I didn't see that.
It's long been, it was on YouTube ages ago now. And actually, with Fame, when Gary's dressed up as Rolf Harrison in this, he's obviously spoofing Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. You watched the BBC iPlayer episodes with subtitles. When you get to the end of both those episodes, just as the credits end, before it goes on to the next episode, you can see the subtitles come up with in advance for those adverts coming on. So they must still be part of the finalized version of the episode. It's just a very funny visual for the special.
Like on the Millennium one, what they put on the end, that's on there.
Oh, that's still on there. Yeah, that's still on every... That's still on the UK Gold repeats. But these post-credit scenes for Fame and Carry On Screaming have been removed from every repeat.
Yeah.
Well, I think this episode is another example of what Andrew Marshall said during The Lady Vanishes memory about a sort of escalator principle. The idea of starting something quite simple and normal, and then it goes kind of sort of escalates, and this idea of, you know, one episode Dracula living next door, Ben being a werewolf, throwing these ideas in to make them believe that that's what's happening, and it's grow and grow and grow. You know, it's just it's a great fun episode, this, and
a great episode, and it makes it even more fun when you've got a comedy legend in the episode as well, who's been in a lot of like really good, really funny sitcoms to begin with, and then he's in this 2.4 Children, which is just a long-running British comedy as well, like the other dramas are what he's been in. So it's quite good to get those veteran comedy actors in a modern-day comedy.
Oh, yeah, the pedigree of guest stars in this show was amazing up to the very end, really, and it just goes to show how popular it was and how it attracted that kind of calibre of comedy legends and guest stars, wonderful actors. Martin, it's been great having you on again. How many stars out of five would you give this episode?
I'd give it a 5, definitely.
Nice. I'd give it a 4, personally. It's not one of my favourites, but I do enjoy watching it.
Yeah, I do. I enjoy watching it because it's the ludicrous of it all, and it's just, there's nothing on TV what's ever been as like this before, like this.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I think other sitcoms that do Halloween specials always have to make it all forced, whereas I think 2.4, again, going back to the escalator principle that Andrew mentions, it's built up to make it seem like it's something supernatural, but then all it's explained, the explanation is something much more banal, but it just makes it, it's the type of thing people go through. People have all these weird things happen in real life, and then it just suddenly it's all explained, it's all nothing that extraordinary.
Yeah.
Which is always funny in 2.4 because the scripts are so well put together. So Martin, thank you so much again for coming on. And is there anything you want to plug at the moment or
no, nothing really, nothing.
Social medias.
Nothing's going on because my show was like last week, so that was really successful and it was good. So that was good.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the three episodes you guested on. It's been good getting to be another 2.4 fan.
And also, speaking of stage shows, I've always thought 2.4 Children would make a brilliant stage show.
Yes, it would, wouldn't it?
Something, you know, even if it's just, even if they're not going to bring it back, because of Ben's passing and a few other characters, they could still get some of the original actors, like they've done with the Dinner Ladies stage show.
Yeah.
And do 2.4 Children on stage with some of the original actors in it, but not, you know, replacing some of the roles, even if you could get one of them back in and have new characters in and a whole new story for the stage.
Yeah,
set in the Porter's house.
Yeah, it could be like the Birds of a Feather series at the day where it was a follow-on, something that's new and stuff. Because I always think if you're going to do sitcom on stage, it has to be a new story. Because no point putting together scenes we already know. But no, thank you again, Martin, and wish you all the best. And please keep in touch.
See you there,
Well, thank you everyone listening. This is the penultimate episode of 2.4 Children. Next week, I'm joined by our final guest for the main series. His name's Jason, who'll be joining me to discuss the Millennium Experience. Thank you very much for listening, and carry on screaming.